HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Stacey McChesney, Head of Health and Wellbeing, and Enda Campbell, Strategic Wellbeing Consultant for Irish Life Health. Guys, you're very welcome to the HR Headquarters podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Declan. Lovely to be here.
Let me just get you both maybe to just do a quick intro about yourselves, just the quick elevator pitch as to what you guys do.
Brilliant. Well, I'll jump straight in here first. So Stacey McChesney, Head of Health and Wellbeing. So I would manage a team of consultants who would look after a corporate's health and wellbeing solutions. So we would go in, analyze, consult, get a good understanding of the needs and interests and values of the employees, and then develop and design out programs and look at behavioral change across the organization. So in a very lucky position to be working in an area that I absolutely love. So over to yourself, Enda.
Yeah, so Enda Campbell, strategic wellbeing consultant, and I am one of those consultants on Stacey's team. So essentially what I do and our other consultants as well, we work with clients, corporate clients of Irish Life and direct clients as well, help them plan, design, implement, and also evaluate their wellbeing programs. So it's a really interesting area to be working in. I've been working with Irish Life for just under 4 years now. So a great evolution in terms of the wellbeing space as well.
Excellent. So I'll give you my perceptions of wellbeing. I think it's obviously there's a lot of focus on it at the moment. I think COVID has probably driven a lot of that. And I do believe lots of organizations are trying to do the right thing. How can organizations understand what they need to do for their particular population of employees?
So yeah, I'll take that one because, we work with clients every day and we've seen that evolution has kind of changed the narrative and wellbeing has always been there to a certain degree, but sometimes the focus of it changes and data is a really strong starting point. So you use data from multiple different sources to try and tell a story or to try and create a pathway or an experience for the employees. So in Irish Life, we're kind of lucky in a lot of ways. We have a lot of data for companies to use at an aggregated level for their own companies, if they've got policies with Irish Life, for example. But also we can help them and collaborate with them as well and sit down and do workshops. And that's why consultancy and that consultancy model is really, really important to be able to take learnings and apply them from one industry, from one client to another client. And really some of the kind of the tools that we use, for example, we'll look at the Irish Life Health health claims data. So trying to spot some trends over the couple of years that maybe the medical team would look at. We do things like health screenings as well to get a really good health profile of the employees and some of the, and that would really inform the programs that you implement as a result. We'd also, on the consultancy side, we have a number of tools and assessments that we've created. We've analyzed those over the last couple of years to really spot where the needs are for the companies. And one of those assessments is our HR wellbeing assessment that we can do with any company. And there's a really comprehensive report provided with that. And really what that is that's looking at not necessarily what companies are doing, but actually how they're doing it. So trying to evaluate, have you got good, strong leadership buy-in? You know, have you assessed the needs correctly? What's your implementation like? Because really, in our industry, you can take one intervention and plant it into another company, and you can have wildly varying outcomes based on how you do it. So it's really important from our perspective to be able to show companies and kind of hold their hands along that journey as well. And then things like technology, obviously, having technology solutions and data from that, like our My Life app, which, provides really kind of rich data at a personal level. And then our work life platform as well, which would show companies in terms of the trends and their needs as well. So they can make kind of informed decisions. Otherwise, it's really guesswork as to what you are trying to implement. So they're kind of the main sources of data that we can really leverage from Irish Life. And we sit down with the company and they bring some data to the table potentially as well, things like internal surveys and those types of things that they want to work on as well. And we'll help them design those really good solutions as well. And we'll get the data coming out the other end as well in terms of evaluation as well, because that's a really important part of the story at the far end of it.
And I think it's a really good point just to make sure that people know it's important to not just look at one data set, I guess, because that can be quite misleading, or you really need to kind of look at the whole story. Like, just as an example, we evaluated our hospital claims data last year, and musculoskeletal, maternity and gastrointestinal came up as the top claims. But actually, when we looked at our income protection data and our early intervention, it was musculoskeletal, orthopedic and mental health. And they were the top reasons for absenteeism. So I think when people are thinking about designing wellbeing initiatives, as Enda's kind of called out, it's that data set, but as rich of a data set as you can get as possible, because you're trying to create interventions that are going to relate to people and that they're going to be wanting to engage with.
And Stacey, just picking up on that, what's the process like when an organization engages with you guys? Is it typical that they will have an end state in mind, and then that changes when the data is looked at? And as I appreciate what you're saying, there are a wide variety of data.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Like, what we have seen is we're definitely looking at the data and the health claims data, because health is very valuable to both the person and the corporate, right? Because you have to have healthy people to have a healthy business. But actually, we're seeing more and more that the social well-being side of things and the community and the connectedness is kind of coming through and driving in. So we might start off, and mental health, I think we can all agree, is an area that is at kind of the forefront of the priority of our minds, thinking that mental health is something that we should focus on. But actually, when we go in, start to look at the data and start to do the kind of employee questionnaires and surveys, just to kind of get into the people that we're trying to address, we actually can find that the reason why there's the mental health issues is because people are feeling isolated from the hybrid working, for example, or people are finding that it's difficult to sleep, or right now there could be family issues, you know, that kind of connected piece is missing. So we often find that we adapt our programs, that we are still focused on, you know, the clear KPIs and what they're looking in the beginning, but actually it might evolve into something that's a bit broader and greater because there's other impacts that are driving that mental health issue.
Yeah, really interesting. And I think touched on measuring the impact as well of an initiative. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's always the trickiest part, to be honest. And it really depends on what you're looking to get out of it. And again, going back to that story, what story do you really want to tell? It's not a well-evolved kind of area for well-being in terms of evaluation. And so what we kind of do with clients normally is you can go down the route of return on investment and value on investment, and that's kind of at the overall level. So really what you're looking at, so there's kind of there are lead and lag measures really. So the lead would be things like your talent attraction, obviously from an HR perspective, retention, things. Also, there's lots of research as well around, you know, more creative organizations and innovative organizations once they have a strong well-being program in place. And the really leading factor as well would be around measuring the health behaviors. So, they're the types of things that we can influence through our programs. And obviously, we would measure the programs specifically as well for their satisfaction, and are they delivering on what they said they would deliver as well. And then the lag measures are sometimes the things that people may get fixated on. And it's quite difficult to measure those. And plenty of studies have tried to do that as well. So you'll see kind of common figures which are used many times. It's, you know, return on investment for every 1 euro, it's, you know, 2.70 euro back, we'll say, overall. And really, these are kind of in three broad categories. So the kind of the health outcomes can affect your absenteeism very, very kind of strongly. So the kind of the main number around that at the moment is a good well-being program will reduce absenteeism by kind of 1.7 days per employee per year. So it's quite significant. And really what you can do is you can get very analytical about it and calculate, you know, the average pay for that person and the output as well, and lost work and productivity, and go down that route. The other factor to consider as well is presenteeism, which is, you know, again, quite difficult to measure in some ways. And that's really when you're at work, but you're not really working to your full potential. And we've all had days like that. And so also the third one in that really lag measure is turnover. So do people stay longer in your company? And the cost, you know, speaking to a HR podcast would definitely be very aware of the cost of turnover and the lost productivity and lost creativity and those types of things as well. So really, those lag measures can take quite a while to come through, you know, up to 2-3 years sometimes. And so what we really need to get is the lead indicators in terms of things like talent attraction is obviously it's a difficult market for employers at the moment in some ways. So they want to make sure that they're getting the right people in there and keeping them happy and keeping them productive as well.
Would you, I don't know if you have any data on this, counterintuitively to my statement, has presenteeism increased as people are no longer present in the office in hybrid environments?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'll jump in first, Enda, but please back up. We've definitely seen there's been an increase in people feeling the sense of burnout. And I know that presenteeism has definitely felt that it is going up in claims. And I think working at home, probably people listening on the call, if I even reflect on myself, sometimes when you're not feeling all that well, it is easy to still sit behind a laptop at your desk and keep going rather than knowing that you need to take the rest and take the time off to recoup. So we have actually seen, by not being present in work, presenteeism is suffering because of the always on feeling that you need to be always on and always available and always there, and tend to kind of power through, even though that's sometimes and most often the worst thing you could be doing in terms of getting better quicker. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but I would definitely have seen that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, burnout is certainly on the rise, and changing priorities as well. So presenteeism can be from a multitude of different kind of factors and reasons for that. But definitely it allows things like work-life balance and flexibility are the positive elements of that. And there's a recent report that's called Health of the Nation that Irish Life did as well, which was, you know, really uniquely positioned, which was just before, well, in May 2020, which is kind of the start of the pandemic, and just released the most recent version of it in May of this year. And showing that kind of presenteeism and loneliness, so social interaction, is something that you do get in the office environment. And while people like spending time alone, they're also lonely, which is very counterintuitive, as you say. But actually, what it shows is that people aren't very good at moderating those feelings of loneliness and isolation, which can turn into, you know, unproductive day, we'll say, at work, especially when you're at home. So those are kind of new skills that you never really had to rely on before. And it was very distinct when we were at home versus in the office in a crowded environment. So these are kind of new challenges that we're all getting used to. And another big impact as well is technology, and something that the effect of kind of being so focused on notifications and our devices, and how that can be very distracting and also isolating, ironically. So we've run some really interesting programs over the last year or so around the what's called kind of digital resilience, and there's a lot of really nice kind of research and programs around that, around forming really good habits, so that you don't kind of slip into that kind of rut almost of presenteeism and you know, for example, that Health of the Nation survey actually looked at social media use as well, and looked at adults on average check their, you know, well, phone or device every hour, and you know, they're spending up to 90 minutes a day on social media as well. So that's just on average. So they can affect you know, productivity and presenteeism in general, and sometimes we're more exposed to that. It's harder to have boundaries whenever you're at home versus kind of in that office environment. So yeah, definitely changes, I would say, in terms of presenteeism.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
You mentioned behavioural, you mentioned wellbeing behaviours earlier as one of your lead sort of measures. What are they?
There's a number of behavior measures that we would take depending on the type of intervention that we've put through. But what we actually have seen is that sometimes it's quite actually hard to change a behavior. So you might know you need to exercise more. You might know that you need to practice mindfulness, but you don't always feel like you're motivated to do it, let's say. So one thing that we really base our programs, and it's kind of the structure of the app that we've kind of formed, is actually on looking at the behavior of a person and what are the key enablers to change behavior. And there's actually a model called the change theory, which teaches us effectively to change our behavior. We need kind of factors to be present. So it might actually just be really nice for this to do a really simple exercise, and End would know well about this with the FOG behavior model. But for everyone to just think about on this call, and Declan, I'll pose the question to you. If your mobile phone rings and you don't answer it, just think about, like, what are the reasons or reason you don't answer your phone? So the phone rings and you don't answer it. And just to think of that reason why you don't answer the phone and jot it down, or just even think about it. So kind of one of the things that's...
Stacey, you're putting me on the spot here.
I am. Okay, so I'll let you think for a second. And where I'm going with this is, one of the things that's needed is a trigger. So to change behavior, we need a trigger. So for example, if you stop at a red light, the light goes green. You know, the trigger is that the light's gone green, so your automatic trigger, you go and you drive. Someone puts out their hand, you put out your hand. You automatically want to go and shake it because it's a gesture and it's the trigger. So tell me, Declan, what are some of the reasons you might not answer your phone?
So the reasons I wouldn't...
You can't say that if Stacey's calling it either.
Yeah, I can't say what?
that is because Stacey's calling.
Yeah, no, it is. No, but that it would be one of the reasons if I didn't want to speak to the person who was calling. That's one reason. If I was already on a video call or something, obviously I'm not going to, unless it's some sort of emergency situation, I'm not going to answer it.
Brilliant. Yeah. So you weren't able to answer it. You were on another video call. Maybe you're in the meeting or in the shower. So that's nearly your ability factor. And then the other one is that you saw that someone was answering it, you know, for whatever reason, you could have been in a bad mood or you didn't want to answer that person. That's nearly your motivation factor. So to be able to change behavior, we look at those three areas. We look at, do you have a trigger? Do you have motivation? And do you have the ability? And the same can be pulled into a corporate setting if you're trying to, as an individual, change your behavior, but as a corporate, allow people the opportunity and the ability to change behavior. So for example, if we're looking at exercise, a trigger could be, let's set your alarm on your phone to go for a walk, or book in a gym class, or book up to a seminar or workshop that your employer has provided you. Others have seen actually that scheduling the same time of each day to complete exercise helps you get into a rhythm, which is really positive. When we look at the ability factor, you could say, okay, I'm going to book in time to my calendar and then make sure that there is no reason to interrupt that session that you have. I know a lot of people have said that, you know, children and kind of being a parent plays a big role in the ability factor. But some nice advice that has worked well for some parents that we've talked to are actually penciling and scheduling in time when you're dropping your kids off to, it could be creche, it could be that they're doing a sports activity. And so just setting up that it's uninterrupted time for you and that you can focus on that time for yourself. And the motivation factor, I know this is probably the most difficult and the one that people tell us is kind of the difficult one to get up and get motivated, and you hardly want to go for a walk. I know the weather's gorgeous today, but if it's out raining, you certainly don't want to be going for a walk. But what does work really well is actually planning to walk with a friend or using a pedometer or signing up to a fitness challenge, something that gives you accountability if you didn't do it. So it really pushes you to keep motivated. I think that really positively for anyone who is from a corporate side trying to look at what they could provide to their employees, or from an individual level, like we're running a challenge at the moment, and it's a really nice app that you can use to actually help you have the capability by better understanding your health through the health score that we provide. You can get the opportunity because we set the challenges for you, and then the motivation through the AI coach and the reward store. So just, it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, recreating the wheel here, but it's just looking at those three areas. Are you actually giving yourself the complete opportunity, you can even call it, to be able to change that behavior? And have you lined up all of those areas? Or as a corporate, have you provided time for employees to take the time to look after their own health?
That's really interesting what you just touched on there at the end, Stacey, because I do think it is interesting. Lots of companies are pushing wellbeing initiatives, but they also have to create the space for the individuals to partake in them, or it's sort of, it's just another thing, if you know, like on yeah. a person's plate. So I think that is it's a subtle and it's a easy thing, but it's also a key thing in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is we have to be aware is you could even create, so you could run just to take a workshop. You know, you could run a workshop at a certain time of the day, but if the culture isn't felt that you should be, you know, going in and listening to that, and this is a priority for the company, that the individuals are actually engaging with these activities, if that's not through the culture, people don't feel like they can attend. So it's just really important that we look at people leaders and people managers in the business, and are they openly speaking about positive steps that they are doing to make changes? And are they promoting the well-being activity? You know, if HR have gone out to go and create all of this and find the right experts and providers and think about the solutions to better the health that they've identified through the data, we need it can't just be on the HR. It has to be a full company-led approach and needs to be driven down from the top to show that that is a key priority and that's part of our culture.
Yeah. Action speaking louder than words. Is it obvious when you engage with a company, is it obvious if they are doing it for the right reasons or they're doing it because they have to be seen to be doing it?
It's interesting you asked that, and sometimes I'm not really sure if it actually matters to a certain degree, if the employees are receiving the, you know, if there's a supportive environment created, the motivations behind it, I'm not sure you'll ever know sometimes.
Fair point.
You know, ultimately, if the employees have the interventions that are there and the kind of the management structures and that Stace is mentioning, and that kind of supportive culture is there, not sure that we can really differentiate between whether it's kind of that lip service, we'll say, versus the really integrated and supportive environment. So yeah, it's a funny one.
and good point. Go ahead, Stacey.
Sorry, Declan, I was going to say, I think you're spot on, and but I do think in a really positive light, like we're obviously seeing data that's coming through that's quite negative, you know, around stress and physical activity and weight gain. But in the positive light, if we flip it, we are very different in terms of our perspective and our priority on health and well-being to where we were 5 years ago. So working in this space like 5 years ago, it was a bit of a tick the box, and it was a bit of a nearly selling the positive impact that this has on health and keeping people healthy. You know, we're living longer, but are we living longer healthier? So I think we've actually, we're very educated and sophisticated now, and our employees are, and they are looking for programs that are meaningful and that are going to be relating to their needs and their interests. So I think we've kind of all put a lot more money behind, you know, budget behind the health and wellbeing program. And we've also, we expect more from our partners in terms of delivering the right health and wellbeing solutions. So I definitely feel we're moving in a much, in a very rapid pace, in a much better way to actually looking after and providing the right solutions, and not being too reactive, trying to be more proactive in the approach from where we were 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of add on to that, you know, in terms of future-proofing as well, and, you know, 5 years forward from now, there's a huge demographic change. And, you know, obviously COVID has changed the way that we work over the last couple of years. But, you know, Gen Z, like millennials, took a hard rap for a while in terms of from employers. But Gen Z, like that kind of, you know, 18 to 24-year-old category now, whenever they are in or starting to be part of the workforce, their priorities are so, you know, around health and well-being are so much more than kind of the average or the rest of the workforce. I mean, just like a really simple stat would be around the, you know, work-life balance being a priority. And I think it's like 67% will say, some of the research that Irish Life have done of the general workforce will say, 67% of Gen Zs say that work-life balance is the most important thing, and it's only 50% for the rest of the employee base. So as we project forward, you know, it's going to become more and more important that they're actually creating these cultures. And in terms of kind of talent attraction, if you're trying to attract that younger workforce, just coming graduates will say, that is one of the most important attraction elements now for employers. And that's what we, talking to HR or kind of wellbeing contacts and companies now, that's one of their main prerogatives, is to make sure that that is to the fore. And when you're, you know, when they're posting on their job application or say onto the job postings, that is a really key selling point. People want to work in places that support.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think people will vote with their feet. So you won't be able to attract people nor retain people if you're not providing a decent level of service. And last question from me, guys, if you don't mind, where does this, as an employer, where does this go to? So where does wellbeing evolve to? What do you see on the horizon?
I think we're going to face similar challenges that we're facing right now if we're not investing in making the change. So I think from a HR perspective, we're nearly part of an experiment, is the truth, because hybrid working did always exist, but it didn't exist to the same extent, where we've kind of had to very quickly adapt to the whole workforce, or most of the workforce, in particular corporates, working at home. And now there's the choice of, well, maybe I don't want to be back in the office, and we need to adapt to this kind of hybrid working world. So I think where we need to be focused on for future is, how do we make this new way work better? And how do we look at what our employees in all, you know, areas of different businesses, what's their value? Because the employee's value is going to be at the forefront of why you choose to stay or move from a company. So I think things to think about is looking at, are our managers, you know, those people leaders who are moving up in roles, it does take quite a different position when you are looking after people, and making sure that you are trained to deal with employee challenges. And if there are mental health issues, making sure that you have the right supports in place for those people managers, so they feel supported, knowing that there's the right safeguard kind of procedures in place to safeguard those employees. And also ensuring, you know, as I said, that kind of value piece, I think the social responsibility, looking at our social well-being, looking at actually providing, say, for example, when we run challenges, quite often we reward by donating to charity organizations. And that goes down really well in organizations, because we're giving back to the community. So it's just very interesting to see how we're slightly adapting into wanting to have our employer look after our health and understand our needs, and really understand us better and provide the right solutions to look after us better. So I think looking at ways of reducing the absenteeism and hopefully bettering the presenteeism is making sure that we understand the individual from the health perspective, but also what they value. And just to call out, it's again just really important that it's not massive steps that we need to do here. Small changes make a huge difference, and just being heard makes a really big difference to the employee. But it's also just not a sole HR's responsibility to solve. It's an organizational level, it's an expert level, it's end is in my job, it's a government level. So collectively, we now, over the next couple of years, need to be testing different solutions and coming together as experts, and hopefully HR, who are in a fantastic position to help people in the organization, are being able to drive these programs and make sure that these programs are being engaged with the employees on site.
Brilliant. And sorry, did you want to come in?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, I think insights change quite quickly as well. And like, that's kind of one of your first questions is around how we use data and how we make decisions. And it's important that, you know, you have the most up-to-date insights and you're making informed decisions all the time. So that's why, you know, companies that we work with, they always find it interesting when we can share relevant insights with them and help take the guesswork out of what they're doing as well. So I think, as their workforce evolves and changes and their needs change as well, having some support there and advice from people is really valuable.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me. Guys, thanks so much for your time today. If any of our listeners would like to get in contact with Irish Life Health, what's the best way to do so?
So yeah, we can, anytime you want to have a, you know, shoot the breeze and discuss some of your pain points and what we can do for you, email wellness@irishlife.ie. That's wellness@irishlife.ie. Or you can find us on LinkedIn either, myself or Stacey. But also we have if you search on LinkedIn, Irish Life Wellbeing, there's a company page there as well where we share some resources every month and more regularly than that as well. So definitely check us out on those two.
Brilliant. And we'll link all of that below the podcast. So Stacey McChesney Head of Health and Wellbeing and Enda Campbell, Strategic Wellbeing Consultant for Irish Life Health. Guys, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Declan. Enjoy the rest of the day. Take care, everyone.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.